Hello everyone, my name is Anastasios Papagiannis. Today I will present our paper with title Toucana, Design and Implementation of a Fast and Efficient Scale-Up Key Value Store. And this is a joint work with Yorgos Haloustros, Pilar González-Ferez and Angelos Bilos. So, first of all, what is a key value store? A key value store is a dictionary for arbitrary key value pairs. And today it's used extensively for web indexing, social networks and data analytics. The main operations that it supports are inserts, deletes, point queries, also known as lookups, and range queries, also known as scans. And the problem is that today key value stores are inefficient because they consume a lot of CPU cycles and they are mostly optimized for hard disks, which is the right decision until today. So, in order to design and implement a key value store, this results in many challenges. And there are overheads related to several aspects of them. First of all, about the indexing data structure, then about the DRAM caching and the actual I/O to the devices, and furthermore, about persistence and failure atomicity. The goal of this paper is to improve CPU efficiency of key-value stores, and more specifically, to design them for fast storage devices like SSDs. In this case, the bottleneck shifts from the device performance to the CPU overheads. So this is the outline of my talk, and now we'll discuss our design and I will motivate our decisions alongside my presentation. I motivate our decisions. So today inserts are important. So we need to avoid a single I/O per insert, and the main approach here is that we have to buffer writes in some manner. This results in the family of write-optimized data structures, where they use a single I/O to the device for multiple inserts. Some examples here are the log structured MEDS tree, also known as LSM tree, the B epsilon tree, and the fractal trees, and others. Today, the most popular are LSM trees, what are used almost from all state-of-art key value stores today, and they are great for hard disks, but because they always perform large sequential I/Os. Now let's dive into more details about the architecture of an LSM tree. And this figure shows the actual architecture of them. It consists of many levels. The level zero is always on the memory and the others are reside on the devices. And this level has a number of large containers. A container consists of a sorted array of key value pairs. They have to be sorted in order to reduce the index size and make this fit in memory. So all inserts go to the level zero, and when the total size of level zero increases over a specific threshold, they execute a compaction and move and create a larger container for the next level. What a compaction is that it simply reads containers from a specific level, let's say from level zero, merges them because they are already sorted, and stores them to the next level. Compaction results in high overheads in terms of CPU processing because of the merging and I/O amplification because we have to read the data from a specific level and write them to the next level. But this results on large sequential I/Os, which is great for hard disks. Now the trend is changed, and this figure shows a comparison of several storage devices. First of all, we compare a hard disk with two different generations of SSDs. Left subfigure shows performance for writes, while the right subfigure shows performance for reads. In both cases, x-axis shows the request size in terms of kilobytes, and the y-axis shows the throughput in megabytes per second. For each device, we have two different curves, one for one outstanding I/O, this is I/O depth 1, and one for 32 outstanding I/Os, this is I/O depth 32. First of all, about hard disks, using different number of outstanding I/Os, the blue and the purple line, there are no difference at all. The only thing matters here is that we have to increase request size in order to achieve peak device throughput. The trend changes on a relatively new SSD, the green line and the orange line. And first of all, we see that if we increase the number of outstanding I/Os, we will get better performance. So let's Let's check only the green curve. In the case of writes, using 16 kilobytes of request size, we can achieve almost peak device throughput. And for reads, using the same number of request size, we can achieve about 90% of the peak device throughput. So, because the devices are changing, we have to reconsider the data structure for the key value stores. And we propose that the B-epsilon-tree is better for this kind of devices. First of all, what is B-epsilon-tree? A B-epsilon-tree is a B-tree variant that uses buffering to improve inserts. It has similar complexity as B-tree for point and range queries, but the good thing here is that it does not have any compactions because it's a tree-like structure. This results in unsorted buffers, and we also need the full index that we cannot keep this in memory as compared to an LSM tree. What is better here compared to LSM is that because of it doesn't have compactions, it results in better CPU overhead and I/O amplification, but it has more I/O randomness, which is bad, and the average request size of the I/Os is smaller. Now let's see more details about how a B-epsilon-tree works. This figure shows different nodes. Each node consists of the blue part where are the keys and pointers to the next nodes, while the yellow part of a node is a persistent buffer. So the purpose of this buffer is to log multiple inserts and use one I/O to the device. And this results in the amortization. So let's see an example here. In this figure, we show a single insert that goes to the root node, the red box there. And because the yellow buffer is persistent, we haven't need to do anything else. When the root node is full, then using a single I/O for multiple inserts, we move data down. And this is done recursively until the data reaches the leaves. Now there is space on the root node and the new key value pair stored there. So in Tucana, we have modified the B-epsilon tree, but the main idea about buffering remains the same. So the first change here is that we use a single buffer per level, the yellow box there, compared to B-epsilon-tree, where they use a single buffer per node. Another difference is that we separate the tree in two parts. The first part is above the red line, which is the part of the tree that resides in main memory. And below the red line, there is the part of the tree that doesn't fit in main memory and resides on the device. So for the in-memory part of the tree, we remove buffering on the upper nodes because it results in overheads. And we enable buffering only on the buffered nodes. These nodes have the blue and the red color. And we use buffering only on the last level of the in-memory part of the tree and for all levels that does not fit in main memory. More specifically, we have done an analysis on the paper and we show that the size of the tree is about 10% of the size of the actual data that they are on the yellow buffer. So given the cost of DRAM and SSDs in a high-end server like for analytics, it is reasonable to buffer only on the last level of the tree, on the leaves more specifically. And now I'm going to talk more specifically about the buffer nodes. So buffer node contains pointer to the actual key value pairs that resides on the right buffer. And if we want to find a specific key, we have to search for it inside the leaf node. We're searching up for the key using a binary search. And because there are pointers to key and not the actual keys, each access to the key results in an I/O. So we use two optimizations for buffered nodes in order to reduce this I/O. The first is that we keep for each key a fixed size prefix that is inside the leaf. And we do binary search using the prefixes, first of all, and this eliminates the IOs needed up between 65 to 75% in all type of queries, or inserts, point and range queries also. We also use hashes, a fixed size hash for each key that helps only on point queries and eliminates about 98% of total IOs required for them. In both cases, if there is a collision, we have to fetch the original key in order to compare it, or we have also to check the key when we have believe that we have found it. Next, I will talk about another important aspect on key value store design, which is the DRAM caching, the actual I/O to the device. Nowadays, key value stores uses space cache, which avoids system calls for hits, but it does explicit I/O using read-write API for misses. But the user space cache results in overheads. We have to search the cache for data in both when we both issue operations about indexed data and in every traversal. These overheads are not important for for hard disks because the latency there it's much larger, but on SSDs they are more pronounced. So for caching we use an alternative approach, and this is that we use MMAP for this purpose. So the general architecture of our key value store is that we use multiple regions per device, and each region contains an allocator and supports multiple indexes. Using indexes, we mean the different trees. So, and then we map each region directly to memory. This allows us to have the same layout for both data and metadata on the device and in memory. And the hits in our purpose do not incur any overhead because they are just a virtual address space translation. And we also improve misses as we do not require serialization and deserialization of the index. But on the other hand, the map results in some new challenges. The first thing is that we cannot handle evictions, page faults, and page fetches. And we try, first of all, to improve inserts. The first idea is that when we have to insert a new key value pair, this requires a read before write IO. We have to fetch the page on memory from device and then update it. So the idea here is that we only insert on newly allocated pages. And we implement a custom Linux kernel module that has access to our metadata, to our allocator metadata, and it detects and eliminates fetches to newly allocated pages. So this is the only thing we improve about a map, but there is still more work to do about the size and the timing of IOs during the evictions and prefetching. And we also need to check about what to keep in main memory and what to evict during the execution. This is about the caching. Now it's time to talk about the persistence and recovery. A typical approach today for hard disks is write-ahead logging. And this results in sequential I/O and also has the ability to batch several small I/Os, which are good for hard disks. However, it has a problem that it doubles any write. First, it has to write it on the log and then in place. And also incurs overheads for log management during the recovery. We use an alternative approach here that is copy on write, which provides instantaneous recovery. And we make updates using modifying pointers atomically. It results in a single write where write ahead logging needs two, but it results in a more random I/O pattern. This is our general design of Tucana, and H-Tucana is a use case of Tucana. What we do in this case is that we use HBase. We removed its storage engine, which based on an LSM tree, and we use Tucana for this purpose. Because HBase is a distributed system and too complicated, we keep this for metadata architecture, fault tolerance, data distribution to different nodes, and also load balancing. Now it's time to talk about our experimental analysis. And this slide shows our experimental setup. So we compare Tucana with RocksDB. RocksDB is a state-of-the-art key-value store. We also check LevelDB, Q Kyoto Cabinet and others as well, but RocksDB seems it's better from compared to all the others. And we also compare H2Kana with HBase and Cassandra, two of the most popular NoSQL key value stores. Our test bed consists of two Intel Xeon processors and 48 GB of DRAM in total. And as storage devices, we use four Intel X25V SSDs. Each of them is 32 GB, and we combine them on a RAID 0 array. And for benchmark, we use YCSB that produces synthetic workloads. In order to check both cases, we use two datasets, one, a small one that fits in main memory, and a large one that is about twice the size of main memory. And our evaluation based on three axes, first of all, in terms of efficiency, of then of throughput, and finally, for I/O amplification. This slide talks about the efficiency, and more specifically about the improvement over RocksDB in terms of cycles per operation. So this figure shows on the x-axis various YCSB workloads. There are load A and load D that generates the database and is, are in certainly benchmarks. And there are several run phases where they have, each of them has different mix of reads and writes. For example, run A is 50% of updates and 50% of reads. Run E is scan intensive, run C is read only. And the y-axis shows the ratio of cycles per operation over RocksDB. More specifically, a bar with a result of 7 means that we are 7 times better compared to RocksDB. We have two bars, the purple one that is for the small dataset, where we are between 5.2 up to 9.2 times better compared to RocksDB. We exclude from these numbers the load phases because it simply generates the whole database and it is not a real life scenario. And for the large dataset, this is the shaded bar, we are between 2.6 up to 7 times better. So next I will talk about throughput. This is a comparison with RocksDB in terms of operations per second. And this graph, this figure here is much different from the previous slide. Again, on the x-axis shows various YCSB workloads, but on the y-axis shows the throughputs in kilo operations per second. This means that this is not normalized compared to RocksDB. So the purple bars here are about RocksDB, and the shaded bars are for Tucana. And using the small dataset, we are 2 to 7 times better and about 4.5 times on average. For the large dataset, this figure shows the large dataset, we are between 1.1 times up to 2 times better. But in this case, the main bottleneck is the device. But we still exhibit performance improvement. Next, I will talk about the evaluation, the trade-off between amplification and randomness. What we do in this case is that we run an insert-only benchmark using the large dataset for both Tucana and RocksDB, and we profile both executions. What we measure is that the total amount of data written for Tucana and RocksDB and the average request size during the execution of this benchmark. Based on these measurements, we show that RocksDB writes 3.5 more data on the device, which is a bad thing, but for the average request size, we have 49 times smaller random IOs, which is a bad thing. And to evaluate this approach, we use two different generations of SSDs, and we use FIO to generate this IO pattern. Tucana approach wins both between, for both cases, 4.7 times up to 3.1 times. And now it's time to conclude this talk. I present Tucana, an efficient key value store in terms of cycles per operation, which targets fast storage devices. The main changes are that we move from LSM3 to Bepsilon3 to minimize the overhead of IO amplification and compactions. We move from explicit IO to MAP to minimize the overhead of DRAM caching, and we move from write-ahead logging to copy and write to minimize the overhead of recovery. The resulting system Tucana is up to 9.2 times better in terms of efficiency compared to RocksDB, up to 7 times better in terms of throughput compared to RocksDB. H2Kana is up to 8 times better in terms of efficiency compared to HBase and up to 22 times better in compared to Cassandra. This concludes my talk. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to hear any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Hi, Fred Douglas, EMC. So you mentioned the sort of steady state performance, and you said something about how you were excluding loads. And I'm wondering, when you think about other work such as Bonfire, which was focusing specifically at the cost of starting things up, can you say something about the relative performance of your initialization? Why don't you flip back a few slides, and I can see if I can tell you which one I'm talking about.
Sorry about this.
It was the one with the bar chart with the relative performance.
Okay.
No, not that far. Let's see. Go back one, maybe. I think. Go back. Go back. No. What? No. All right, then go forward. It was. Anyway, it was the one with where you showed small and large data sets across a bunch of different workloads.
Yes.
And you said that you were not looking at the time to load. It sounded like you were basically saying, you know, to actually run a particular benchmark with the database once it had started.
Yes.
This is the performance you get.
Yes.
And I'm saying, given that you have sort of different configuration in terms of how you actually are, you know, sort of initializing things, and you said you were excluding the initialization time, I thought you said.
I also include the initialization time in all cases. But I said,
what is the state of the database when you start your benchmark?
It's a clear database. First, we run load A to generate a full database. And using the same database, we run A benchmark, B benchmark, C benchmark. And when we reach D benchmark, we delete the whole database and then
Right. So what would happen? So what I'm asking is, you know, when you look at different databases and they have different sort of times, both in the steady state when you're running queries,
yes,
but also your machine powers off, you start up. What is the cost when you actually first start running? I was comparing it to things like Bonfire, which talk about caching state, yes, and, you know, instant startup.
I don't have numbers for this, but okay. What we have seen in this case is that RocksDB has a relatively large initialization time if the database exists. But this time also fetch data on the cache, and the run is faster then. In our case, we start the benchmark almost without any delay, but we have a specific period of time where we need to fetch data on the cache, and this is low in the beginning. But we don't evaluate further.
Yeah, I was looking for the quantification of that. Okay, yes. Thank you.
Hi, Scott Fritchie with VMware. One of the things that log structured merge trees in general have problems with that you noted is the compaction, and then strategies for deferring that work, and when you decide, oh crap, I can't defer that work anymore, and so that causes really large stalls in terms of blocking forward progress to do the background work, right? So do you have any kind of similar deferred work stalls in your tree, and how do they compare?
We didn't have any stalls similar to RocksDB. We execute a snapshot for copy and write in order to make data persist, but it simply allocates a new node, and this is almost a fixed instantaneous operation. So we don't have to wait for compactions because we write data somewhere and we leave them here. We don't move data during the execution.
Things like flushing those edit buffers to disk and whatnot, were you measuring the times for those kinds of additional IOs?
So in all benchmarks, there are some numbers on the paper. I don't remember them correctly. I don't remember. But on all these cases, we every 100 seconds, we fetch all the data to the disk in order to make them persistent. So these numbers has this stall. But compared to the compaction of RocDB, they are smaller. I don't have the exact number to say how much smaller.
Okay, thank you.
Ray Lucchese, Silverton Consulting. You mentioned with the large database against RocksDB, the throughput was not that different. You said because this was, you thought this was a device limit, the device was a bottleneck in this environment.
Yes.
If you had a faster device, you think that your approach would be better, significantly better? Or do you have any idea on that?
We believe so. I don't have numbers to claim this, but we believe that for faster devices, our design is more lightweight compared to RocksDB, and we believe that we will be better in both terms of efficiency and throughput. But okay. I don't have a number for this.
All right, thanks.
Okay, so let's thank Anastasis again for his talk.